HockeyStrengthConditioning.com presents the Hockey Strength Podcast.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Hockey Strength Podcast, the official podcast of HockeyStrengthConditioning.com, the only hockey training resource you'll ever need. My name is Anthony Renna, and you can reach me at HockeyStrength@gmail.com. All right, well, this is the third episode of the Hockey Strength Podcast, and although I said I'll be doing this once a month as a compliment to all the great content that we have at HockeyStrengthConditioning.com, I'm actually going to be doing a bunch more in the next few months. So what we're going to be doing after today's episode, we're going to be interviewing some of the presenters for the hockey track at the Boston Sports Medicine and Performance Group's Summer Seminar in May. We're going to start with Dan Boothby, who is Northeastern strength coach and one of the organizers of the event. And we'll also have on Hockey Strength and Conditioning's Sean Skane. We'll have on Joel Jameson, Cal Dietz, Pete Friesen. So it should be a great series leading up to the conference. We're going to talk more about that with Dan next episode. If you're not familiar with the site, it is a partnership with NHL strength coaches Sean Skane and Mike Potenza, along with USA Hockey's Daryl Nelson and Kevin Neal from Endeavor Sports Performance, who's actually on the show today. We have some great contributors on there as well, like Clarkson's Jamie Rodriguez, UMass Lowell's Devin McConnell, Anthony Donskoff from Donskoff Strength and Conditioning, and Maria Mountain from Revolution Sport Conditioning in London, Ontario. Much more on there as well. And then there's a bunch of videos, articles, programs go up every week, along with periodic webinars and monthly youth programs. We have a very active forum that all of our coaches participate in. So if you train hockey players, you have to check out this site. There's a trial offer at 7 days for just $1. So you can go on, check out all the videos, articles, forum threads, programs, and more. And if you don't love the site, just cancel your membership. You're out a buck. Now, we're pretty sure you're going to be impressed with all the great content, and you'll want to continue for just $9.95 a month. That's an incredible bargain if you train hockey players, or even if you're a hockey player yourself and you want to get advice from some of the best hockey strength coaches in the world. Now, there's a catch. That price is going up on April 9th. That's going to be basically April 7th is the end of the NHL season. So we are, once that season, the playoffs start, we are raising the price to $15 a month. So it's a great time to get on there, lock in that price for the rest of the time. So you got to check this out. Now, on today's show, I'm speaking with Kevin Neal, who is a HockeyStrengthConditioning.com partner. He's also director of athletic development for Endeavor Sports Performance. I spoke to Coach Neal about his two-day in-season program, directional rolling, and where he's at with breathing techniques for his players. Kevin's a guy who really has done a lot of research on that, so wanted to get his take on that and see what's going on. Lots of great info coming up from Coach Neal, so let's get him on the phone. All right, so I'm here with Kevin Neal, and Kevin is one of the partners here at HockeyStrengthConditioning.com. He's also the Director of Athletic Development for Endeavor Sports Performance. He's also written a book called Ultimate Hockey Training, and you can check that out at KevinNeal.com. Kevin, thanks for coming on today.
My pleasure, and thanks for having me.
All right. Well, you know, in this interview today, we want to talk about, you know, you've obviously put up a lot of content at HockeyStrengthConditioning.com. So I want to talk about some of that program. I think I was telling you before, I love this two-day in-season training program because a lot of times it's more practical for some of the average folks, average trainers out there. Sometimes, you know, we get programs from, you know, like Coach Boyle or whatever, it's 4 days, and we don't all have 4 days to work with guys. So, you know, you're in phase five, you posted phase five recently. It's the kind of end of the season for 16U and 18U teams. Just give us a rundown of this program.
Yeah. I mean, first, you know, this is a time of year when, fatigue management is a huge priority for us. So, the 18U team that we work with has been relatively shorthanded all season long. You know, they've been riding a few of their horses pretty hard for most of the season. So yeah, most of these guys have a tank that's on or near empty at this point, which isn't exactly where you want to be going into districts and hopefully nationals here coming up. Likewise, the 16U teams, most of those kids play high school hockey, and that's something that I've talked about a little bit in the past too, where, you know, you're looking at, for this club team, you know, upwards of 70-game schedule. They're on the ice for practice 2 to 3 times a week. And then you add in the fact that these kids are practicing with their high school team two times a week and then playing a game or two most weeks too. And, you know, most of these kids are also the better, the upper end of their high school talent. So their coaches are going to ride them hard for that team as well. And it's just too much. But, you know, the same token, the kids made the commitment to play, so they have to see it through. So, you know, coming back to the training idea, we generally go day one, which is earlier in the week, and we'll try to do a little bit of power and strength maintenance. So you can see that mixed in with this final phase, we still hang clean, you know, relatively low volume. We'll do a one leg, one arm SLDL. More than anything, just to help groove that pattern and continue to reinforce proper movement there. You know, their legs are going to take a beating from all the skating, so we want to do a little bit of maintenance, but, you know, still back off that too. And then just the typical upper body stuff. We have a loaded push-up and a chin-up in there. And then day two, you know, we mix in a little bit of power work with a vertical jump, but I kind of look at that as we're not really training maximal power at this stage of the year. It's kind of more of a you know, if you want to think of it as an activation thing, it's to upregulate the nervous system and the central drive. But from there, you know, again, it's really low volume. We're just going two sets of five, and pretty much the rest of that day two is just designed to get them to move in a bunch of different patterns. There's some mobility work encompassed in there. There's some you know, half kneeling positions to help open up the hip flexors and things like that. So, you know, I told the guys before, before we started this final phase that, especially on day two, but really in general, you know, they should never feel tired from these off ice training sessions. If anything, they should feel loose and warmed up and ready to go get a good skate in.
Yeah. And I noticed you definitely, you know, for the person who's not looking at this right now in front of them, you know, you got the tri sets in there, you got a, even on day two, you got a quad set, and there is a lot of, you know, quote unquote corrective stuff in there, rectus femoris mobilization, supported hip airplane, lateral mini band walks, like you said, quadruped extension rotation, psoas lifts, nothing really too crazy, but, lots of, you know, certainly a lot of time that built in recovery. Are you really trying to get these guys to do some other, recovery stuff in the like, I know post game is going to be tough for, you know, the kids that young if it's not organized, but just some stuff on their own.
Yeah, I think that that message started at the beginning of the year, where I basically said, you know, I'm going to teach you guys how to foam. You know, we foam roll and we dynamic warm up before every off ice session, and we stretch after every off ice session. And you know, the message I sent to those guys at the beginning of the year was, you know, look, I'm not going to be with you before every one of your practices. I'm not going to be with you before every one of your games. You know, I get to see you guys twice a week. I want you guys to learn this stuff so that you can do it before every one of your practices and games on your own and just have it be team or captain run. I think for the most part, they've taken advantage of that. You know, I said early on too, and you know, this is just part of working with teenagers. And I'm very fortunate to have a very mature group, but you know, I tried to send the message that this is your responsibility to do what's in your best interest to take care of your body. You know, like if you're going to be the kid that kind of half-asses the foam rolling and then you know, talks their way through the dynamic warm up and then bails on the stretching, then don't come to me when you tweak something and say, I want this to be better yesterday. You know, like this is why we do these things consistently throughout the year so that you're never in that position. And, you know, for the most part, like I said, we have a really great group of kids and everybody's bought in. But the recovery thing, you know, again, it's like you can't fully recover from too much stress. You know, by definition, too much stress is too much. And, you know, these kids are up at six, they're up late because of practice, games, whatever. You know, they're skating sometimes up to 10 times a week. There's only so much that they can do, but, you know, we tried to, we had a nutrition talk trying to get them to clean up some of that stuff and, you know, emphasize that they need to sneak in naps whenever they can. They can foam roll and stretch throughout the day if they're at home. And some of the kids have approached me about specific things that they're dealing with from a a restriction standpoint, or, you know, just kind of like a nagging muscle pull or whatever the situation might be. And I've given them some stuff that they can do on their own at home too. That's worked out pretty well for them.
All right. Well, while we're on the concept of recovery, you wrote a nice article on directional rolling and you know, with the foam roll. Can you just kind of give us a nice overview of what directional rolling is and maybe what, you know, how hockey players can use it?
Sure. I guess when I was first taught foam rolling, it seemed to be a relatively generic approach in that, you know, we're just rolling up and down across all the muscles. And, you know, a little bit more specific than that, maybe people would say roll along the direction of the muscle fiber. So when you look at, you know, your quads, you might be rolling up and down, you know, from knee to hip to cover the full span of the muscle. And, you know, this foam rolling stuff is still relatively new. I think it naturally is going to evolve over time. And I was fortunate to hear Thomas Myers speak twice last summer, once at BSMPG in Boston, and then again at the Perform Better Summit in Chicago. And he emphasized this idea of muscles, or I shouldn't even say muscles, soft tissue structures, connective tissue, muscles, all that stuff, either being locked long or locked short. And locked long would be eccentrically loaded, locked short would be concentrically loaded. And you said that the way that you would go about releasing that from a manual therapy perspective would be different depending on whether it was locked long or locked short. If it was locked short, you would want to work along the grain of the soft tissue. And if it was locked long, you would want to work almost perpendicular to it. So you can take that concept of directional manual therapy and apply it to rolling techniques. And, you know, and this isn't a concept that if you have 20, 13-year-old kids that you're showing foam rolling for the first time and there's one of you, you know, directional rolling probably isn't going to be in the cards. But for people that have more captive audiences, smaller groups, athletes that are dealing with pretty specific limitations or injuries, then this is a concept that you can definitely apply. And, you know, there's some things, some of the areas that we've kind of approached it, you know, your hip external rotators or short hip extensors, depending on how you want to look at it. That's an area that's pretty frequently short or overly dense and stiff in hockey players. And when most people do that, they roll, this might be hard to explain, but they kind of set the roller up so that it goes from left to right, and they sit on top of it. So one roller sticks out past their left hip, and the other side of the roller sticks out past their right hip, and they roll up and down over those over that posterior hip musculature so that they're moving kind of from head to toe in that direction. So their body's oriented perpendicular to the roller. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. So if they're basically kind of doing almost like, you know, just basically sitting on the foam roll, like a normal like picture that you would see of somebody sitting on a foam roll.
Exactly. And they're oriented perpendicularly to the roller. So if you think about that, if you think about the quasi-horizontal orientation of that musculature, they're rolling across or perpendicular over top of that lateral hip musculature. You know, using this directional rolling concept, you could turn the roller 90 degrees so that it's now oriented parallel to the way the body's positioned and roll side to side over that area. So basically, just lateral to the sacrum and then across to right behind where the, where those muscles connect in with the femur. And usually when we change the orientation of the roller and just have somebody sit on it, they feel it right away. You know, it gets in a little bit deeper. It's a little bit more specific. They can ride that musculature the whole time, or, you know, they can put tension on it the whole time and really work different areas of the muscle, where if you're just rolling across it, you know, you're kind of on it, you're off it, you're on it, you're off it. We'll do that with a tennis ball and a lacrosse ball too. Because you really don't need to roll that far. And that's kind of another thing that we see with a lot of foam rolling is that people hop on and they just kind of zip back and forth across it. And, you know, it's really important to go slow and really, you know, focus on your breathing and concentrate on letting those areas just relax if you want to make some actual changes in density and stiffness and things like that. If you're just looking to get some blood moving and warm up a little bit, then, you know, it almost doesn't matter as much.
Yeah, no, I could see that being, you know, for the average person who's not really, hasn't really dealt with any injuries or whatever, I could see them blowing through the foam roll a little bit more. Whereas if you got somebody kind of coming post rehab, maybe they're going to be able to spend, or they'll be focused and spend some more time on that. I like that idea though. It's definitely interesting concept. So cool stuff. Speaking of another interesting concept, on the Strength Coach Podcast, we've been really over the last probably two years, you know, this idea of working on the breath, and you know, you were talking about it just even with the foam roll, working on the breath and trying to really focus on breathing and different breathing exercises. I know you've really been trying to do some research on that. Can you just talk about where you're at with breathing exercises for your players?
Sure. And I think, Ant, that which aspect or which avenue we discuss about breathing kind of depends on which situation you're trying to address. I know that on one of the forum threads, we talked a little bit about conditioning tests. And one of the things that I've just noticed is that when people are really trying to hustle and they're tense and maybe a little bit nervous and they're trying to skate as hard as they can and they're in an on-ice conditioning test or run as hard as they can in an off-ice conditioning test, that they really hold their breath and cut short their breathing. And if you're doing a 40-yard dash, or if you're doing a goal line to blue line sprint test, then if you hold your breath, it might not be that big of a deal. But if you're doing a 300-yard shuttle, or if you're doing, you know, some comparable on-ice conditioning test, and you're not breathing throughout, it's definitely going to limit your ability to maintain those speeds towards the end of that test. So In those situations, we just say, remember to breathe. You know, like, it's usually shortly after they get going, they clench up and the breathing is blunted a little bit. If you just emphasize, you know, like, make sure that you're breathing in and out the whole time, that can make a huge difference, not just in how well they perform on that first one, but a lot of the conditioning tests that people use are repeat tests. So they, you know, they might do a 300-yard shuttle, rest 2 or 3 minutes, and do another one, and then potentially they go on from there. So if you make sure that you're taking in as much air as you can during the first one, you're going to perform better on the first one, but you're also going to recover more quickly before you have to start the second and potentially third. Breathing can also be used as a way to access the autonomic nervous system. A lot of what we see with our players is that they kind of get stuck or are more shifted towards a sympathetic state. You know, just a very basic definition, if you think of sympathetic as kind of your fight or flight, and your parasympathetic system is your rest and digest, I think that'll work for our purposes today. But you know, these guys, they get really amped up, and then they train, and then they get really amped up, and they practice, and then they come home, and they can't sleep as well, and, you know, they don't really ever get to hit the off switch and shift back to a more parasympathetic state, at least not purposefully. You know, a lot of the kids just shut down because the tank's on empty. So what we can do is use breathing. And it's not, you know, it's nothing magical. If you just have people kind of lay down on their back, throw their feet flat on the ground, and just breathe in, you know, 3 count through their nose, exhale fully through their mouth, pause for a few seconds before they inhale again, you go through a few cycles of that, and your body just starts to shift towards a more parasympathetic state. That's probably not desirable if you train the guys off the ice right before they skate. You know, you're going to want them to be in a sympathetic state before they go on the ice. But after they get off the ice, it's a strategy that can be employed to help them get out of that sympathetic state faster, which is kind of just like jump-starting the recovery process. And, you know, one of the things that I said to our players, and I explained this to them, is that like this is something that you'll want to use when you get home from practice every day, or when you get home from a game, you know, if it's late and you have a game the next day and you're not doing anything. It's a way to help shut your mind out. You know, you focus on your breathing, you try to ignore all the other thoughts that come into your head, just process them and get them out. And, you know, people sleep sooner, people sleep better, deeper, when they use this as a method to kind of shut down. So we've also used breathing a little bit that way. And then the other thing, and this might be more of the discussions on strength coach and some of the things that you were looking for, but breathing as a pattern strongly influences every component of our movement. I've been very heavily influenced by the Postural Restoration Institute in this regard, and just understanding that we have anatomical asymmetries and asymmetrical movement tendencies that cause asymmetrical structure adaptations throughout our body. One of those that's relatively common is a rib flare on the left side. A lot of guys that are overextended in through their lumbar spine will have a bilateral rib flare, but it's usually worse on the left. And what happens in a situation like this is that you lose optimal positioning of the diaphragm. Instead of having a nice dome shape that would allow it to descend and ascend with inhalation and exhalation, it moves more horizontally, so that when it contracts, it pulls the spine into further extension. So one of the things that we've incorporated a lot more of is teaching people how to exhale fully so that those ribs come down, use light abdominal contractions to help reinforce those ribs being down, and just making sure that their thoracolumbar area is centrated, and basically just making sure that their spine and rib alignment are where they should be. You know, the key to breathing, I kind of think of as you need to be able to inhale from an exhalation position. And I don't think that that concept has really been appreciated in most strength and conditioning settings. And I understand why. You know, it's kind of esoteric. Most people, I think, make the assumption that we all breathe. It's handled autonomically. You know, it's not something that we need to think about. It's probably done correctly. And, you know, you quickly realize once you learn what to look for that most people aren't doing it correctly. And there are several reasons for that. But when people start to breathe incorrectly, it feeds a lot of these other common patterns and common injuries that we see in athletes. It's going to affect the position of the ribs underneath the scapula, which is going to affect scapular positioning, which is going to affect shoulder function. Likewise, it's going to affect pelvic positioning, which is going to affect hip mobility and range of motion and stability. It's been very interesting to see some of the patterns that PRI talks about, like a loss of left hip adduction and left hip extension, a decrease in right glenohumeral internal rotation, a decrease in left glenohumeral flexion and horizontal abduction. And these limitations are pretty prevalent and very noticeable when you go through the battery of tests that they suggest. And almost every single time I can use one specific breathing exercise that, you know, the first time I teach it to somebody, it might take a minute and all of the range of motion returns to symmetrical immediately after. You know, you look at baseball pitchers, and I know obviously we're discussing hockey now, but you look at baseball pitchers and being able to attain another 15 to 20 degrees of internal rotation on their right arm, which is a throwing arm for a lot of them, within a minute is a very positive thing. You know, likewise with hockey players, being able to achieve full left hip adduction and extension within a minute is a very positive thing as well. You know, if you don't have those things, it's going to be hard to turn to the left. And when you drive off your foot, when you stride with the left foot, it's more likely that you're going to overstretch some of the ligaments and things on the front of that left hip, which is a common source of groin pain and, you know, some of the other injuries, labral tears and things like that we see. So, you know, if there's one take home from this for the people listening, it's that breathing is very, very, very important. And if it's not something that you've been looking into currently, then I think that it's worth doing so. And you can look to some of the information from PRI to do that. You can look into some information. I know Patrick Ward and Charlie Weingroff have written, and Jeff Kubos have written quite a bit about that. I know DNS goes into some of that stuff too. So, you know, it's out there. It's just something that people may have overlooked or not really understood the full importance of.
Yeah, yeah, and we're seeing it more and more, and I think it's definitely an interesting topic, and we're going to probably see a lot more on it, and you know, more about that practical application of it. So, Kev, thanks for coming on today. Thanks for all the great content at HockeyStrengthandConditioning.com, and hopefully we'll talk to you soon.
Cool, thanks, Dan. Appreciate it.
All right, well, that's going to do it for episode 3 of the Hockey Strength Podcast. Thanks to Coach Neil for coming on and sharing his insights into hockey strength and conditioning. And don't forget, go to HockeyStrengthandConditioning.com. Sign up for the trial membership for just $1. 7 days for just $1. And if you love us, it's $9.95 a month. That price is going up. You got to lock in the price forever, but you need to do it before April 9th. April 9th, we're going up to $15 a month, so lock it in now, $9.95 a month. You can try us out, $1, 7 days. If you train hockey players, you need to check it out. I'm Anthony Renna. Thanks for listening, and I'll speak to you next time.